In a letter written in 1921, Charles Blandon remarked that, from my knowledge and experience in business, manufacturing newsprint would be about the last occupation I would want to invest the very large amount of money necessary and take the risk attending. Yet in 1927, Blandon did fully enter into the highly competitive and uncertain business of producing newsprint. 2 years after he took that major step, an amendment to the Articles of Incorporation of the Itasca Paper Company changed its name to the Blandon Paper Company. Blandon offered two reasons for the change. First, the name Itasca was so widely used in the area that it caused confusion. And second, Blandon's name was well known to newspaper publishers, potential customers, throughout the mill's trade territory and would be influential on the company's stationery. The largest neon sign anywhere in northern Minnesota was erected at the mill to proclaim the change of name. Letters 6 feet high, arranged vertically over 100 feet of the huge smokestack, spelled out Blandon Paper Company. The sign was so big that at night it could be read from the top of the hill near Coleraine, 6 miles away. And I'm looking at some of that company stationery right now, and it illustrates Blandon's point. First, here's new stationery, and in small little block letters at the top, it says Blandon Paper Company. And then underneath that, formally. And then in fancy letters, they have almost a 3D effect. They do have a 3D effect. Fancy letters, much bigger, says Itasca Paper Company. And then comes the next stationery. And that says, not such fancy letters, but still nice script and large letters at the top of the paper, Blandon Paper Company, and in very small letters underneath that, formerly Itasca Paper Company. It illustrates the transition. The next stationery is just simply Blandon Paper Company with very nice scrolly type letters. Well, Blandon had given up his secure publishing career to enter the high-risk newsprint business at the very worst of times. Overproduction in the United States and Canada, and an approaching period of economic distress, and that's putting mildly because, of course, it's the Great Depression that we're about to get plunged into, was about to put the newspaper industry into a protracted time of low or non-existent profits. Yet at the end of the 1920s, when already many newsprint mills had reduced operation frequently to a four-day work week, the Blandon Paper Company maintained a six-day week and full production. Mill manager C.K. Andrews noted that competition was fierce and that publishers were accepting only the best of paper. He explained to a reporter from the Herald Review that the high quality of the sheet produced in Grand Rapids kept existing customers satisfied and new orders coming in, and as a result, the company was able to sell all of the newsprint it made. Another factor, though, was very important in maintaining that full production. When Blandon negotiated the sale of his papers with the Ritters, he forcefully argued that the papers should retain their association with the paper mill in Grand Rapids because of its proximity to the Twin Cities and the resultant favorable freight rate. Blandon won a provision in the sales contract specifying that the full newsprint requirements for the newspapers would be purchased from the Itasca Paper Company for 15 years. Yeah, very wise and very important decision there. Well, by 1930, the mill was producing 25,000 tons of newsprint per year, and that's triple that of 1916. With the mill still operating at capacity, there was no need for layoffs or reduced working hours, and the mill continued to employ about 140 people. Furthermore, despite lowered profits, the company added a significant additional employee benefit in 1929. That was a very nice pension plan in which the employees could contribute any amount that they wanted, and for each dollar that they put in their fund, the company would add another 25 cents. So it was another nice benefit for the employees. An editorial in the Herald Review expressed considerable satisfaction with the figures of the 1930 federal census. Although Grand Rapids had added only 292 citizens to its population, increasing from 1920's 2,914 to 3,206, Itasca County ranked sixth in growth in the state with some additional 3,000 people. Most of the increase in the county was due to an influx of farmers. 2,350 people listed their occupations as farming, almost 1,000 more than 10 years previously. And what we're seeing there, of course, is all of those ads talking about the garden wonderland of the north and how you were going to make your fortune from farming had brought so many people to the county. Well, despite optimism about the census and its increases, the deep-seated economic malaise that pervaded the nation that year raised ominous speculation. An editorial in the Herald Review warned, "This world of struggle is to become even harder for a while." Apologizing for so gloomy a prediction, the editorial commented on the nationwide industrial depression and called for all citizens to have patience and suggested that thrift and purchase of necessities only was in order. In November, another editorial pointed out that across the country, the year had been very bad for business, with even automobile production, which heretofore has progressed each year, taking a backward step. Yet, as 1930 drew to a close, another editorial in the Herald Review noted that retail trade figures in town were not as low as had been expected. The town weathered the difficult year in exceptionally fortunate condition. Early in 1931, Lawrence Rossman, publisher of the Herald Review, visited a large city where he witnessed a breadline. Upon his return, he wrote that those living in this smaller community do not realize the suffering that unemployment brings. Rossman described well-dressed men standing in line who would honor any industry and any employment. Publisher continued, "The people of Grand Rapids still faced the hardships, comparatively speaking, of frontier days, but fortunately, the people of the village are employed to as great a degree as ever before." Rossman concluded that there was ample food and noted that Grand Rapids had even been able to provide a little help in the form of Red Cross donations to those elsewhere who are not so fortunate. During the spring of 1931, Grand Rapids still appeared economically better off than most places. Certainly, it was doing better than most of northeastern Minnesota, where the slump in the steel and mining industry had considerable impact. The paper mill continued to operate at capacity. As the nationwide depression continued, business volume in Grand Rapids decreased a bit, but it still remained well above the norm for that year. Moving on to 1932, a front-page article in the Herald Review stated, "Grand Rapids has prospered during the year." It's prospered. Of course, there are many people who could use more money than they have. Of course, there is need for greater employment, but the houses of the community are well filled. The children of the community are well clothed. Everywhere you go in Grand Rapids, there is improvement. General repairs, maintenance, and fresh paint are evident all through the town, and the Herald Review advised that the times were propitious for such activity because supplies could be purchased at a good price and because many workers were available. The King Lumber Company of Grand Rapids reported more cottages under construction at Lake Pokegama than at any previous time. The telephone company reported that despite the economy, 88% of the families in Grand Rapids still enjoyed telephone service. When a longtime mill employee was asked in 1980 about the Depression, he replied, "Well, it didn't seem to affect us here. We knew it was on, but it didn't seem to stop anything." And another editorial in a 1933 issue of the Herald Review pointed out that despite the continuing national economic decline, Grand Rapids has moved forward. The fortunate economic circumstances were, of course, attributed to the vital industry in Grand Rapids, the paper mill. The fact that during national and global depression, the Blandon Paper Company still operated at capacity and maintained full employment without layoffs or significant reduction in working hours explains the area's good fortune in avoiding much of the economic devastation of the early 1930s. The buying power of 137 paper company employees was of considerable importance to the town's merchants, and the continued purchase of wood for the mill was of equal importance to area farmers and loggers. But there's more. There's a great deal more to this story, and C.K. Blandin has additional means of aiding Grand Rapids and easing the town through those depression years. We'll turn to that next time.